The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. We have no sponsor for this month's program. If you would like to become a sponsor or if you have any questions, please give us a call at our office at 919-832-5138. Well, once again, we are entering the technological age. As I mentioned the last couple of weeks, I had to use the Consumer Reports online version. Guess what? I didn't get my Reader's Digest this month, so I get to use the online version of the Reader's Digest. So if I have to pause occasionally, I apologize ahead of time. On the other hand, it is kind of nice to be able to sit here and just stroke things and have it work. So we'll start off right now with a letter from the editor. Dear readers, one reason people like to become journalists is that we like to get to meet the kind of people we never encounter in our own boring lives. I still can't believe this geeky guy from suburban Columbia, Maryland, once sat with Yoko Ono in her kitchen to talk about John Lennon's legacy. I was so afraid I'd make a mess in her palatial New York City apartment that I wouldn't even accept a cup of coffee. As memorable as that was, it doesn't really compare to photographer Spencer Hayfron's excitement for this issue. A father of two and an enthusiastic boxer, Spencer, 45, was having trouble swallowing in the summer of 2016. He went to the doctor even though he knew he was too young and healthy to worry much. Maybe it's cancer, he joked to his doctor. It was cancer. Specifically, stage 4 cancer of the esophagus that had spread to one lymph node. His doctors were so concerned about the aggressiveness of his case that they started him on chemotherapy and radiation even before they had all the test results. Uncertain of his future, Spencer shared the news sparingly. When you tell friends and family, you see them crumble, and there's nothing you can do about it, he says. It's hard. You feel guilty for hurting them. Still, word got around, including to Rebecca Simpson Steele, our photo director. When we began to work on our cover story about the dramatic CART breakthrough in cancer treatment, she asked Spencer if he'd like to do the photography. He said yes. Meeting Dr. Steven Rosenberg, who was one of President Reagan's cancer doctors, was inspiring, Spencer says, but it was the patients who rocked his world. Looking back on my time in treatment, I was in complete denial, says Spencer, who has been cancer-free since July of 2017. This helped me open up. I said to the patients, you and me, we had this experience even the doctors don't understand. It's like a club, the cancer club. We all had cancer, and we all survived. Letters, comments on our recent issues. The nicest places in America. On a whim, we ended up in Gallatin, Tennessee to view the recent solar eclipse. As total strangers, we were surprised to be invited to spend the day at a private viewing party overlooking the city. Gallatin deserves to win your Nicest Place in America contest. Its residents are as nice as they come. Thank you for the memories. Cindy Moorhart, Canal Winchester, Ohio. I was filled with joy when I read that Hayesville, North Carolina was listed as one of your nicest places. As a pastor, I work with a lovely woman named Marie Hansbauer on a mission in Hayesville. One day, she showed me a letter she had received. It was unique because it had only two things on the envelope, Grandma and 28904. It was the early 1960s when the zip code was new, but those five digits got the letter to Hayesville, and in the tiny town of 428 residents, everyone knew who Grandma was. Reverend Ronald Haight, Cincinnati, Ohio. They did the right thing. When my eye caught the word Muslim in your October issue, my heart stopped. Being a Muslim, I prayed that it wasn't something negative. As I read about the man who unknowingly brought a stolen computer and then returned it to its owner, I couldn't stop my tears. Kudos to you for spreading love instead of fear. Hannah Johannad, Woodbridge, New Jersey. How to eat as much as possible. When I read one way to express gratitude for your meal is to stuff yourself, I was sure that the article was going to be hilarious, but I was wrong. The author was as serious as a heart attack. Sure, I indulged last Thanksgiving, but I certainly didn't strategize to gorge myself. I expressed my gratitude to my hostess by bringing a nice flower arrangement. Karen Poole, MSNRN, Prescott Valley, Arizona. Stormtroopers. We often put the wrong people on a pedestal. Our heroes are athletes and movie and TV personalities, while the people who should be admired are brave souls like the Coast Guard crew members who helicoptered into a hurricane to rescue stranded sailors. They deserve our respect and gratitude, and a lot more money for doing what they do. Linda Schneider, Magapasset, Massachusetts. word power. I pride myself on having a credible vocabulary and usually do well with your word power quiz. But I day, Sarah, your November culinary offering ate my lunch. Dana Bible, West Palm Beach, Florida. Thank you for caring so much. I was touched by the love story of Peter DeMarco and his wife, Laura Levis, and his tender thank you for those who cared for her at the hospital. But right below Peter's final words was a humorous blurb. Ouch. The thoughts I was thinking, the emotions I was feeling, were hijacked by humor. DeShower Joyce, Burke, Virginia. And I've noticed that a couple times in the Reader's Digest. You'll have a very serious article, and then there's something that's totally irrelevant in the humorous thing. You'd think they'd put it in a different place. Bad puns are how I roll. EYE. I might have helped championship punster Peter Rubin during round on disease-related puns. I have a gluten allergy. It's in bread. INBRED. Tribute in Taps. Everyday hero story about the man who taught himself the trumpet so he could play taps at military funerals receives an unusual number of letters from grateful readers. What a wonderful way to honor our veterans. My father was an Air Force veteran, and there was supposed to be a recording of taps at his funeral, but the tape didn't work. It would have been nice to have a live trumpeter or bugler to make sure he received the honor he deserved after 22 years of service to his country. Doris Tain, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This story makes me think of my dad, who played taps in the Army in the World War II. I wish I were Gary Marquette's neighbor so I could hear him play every night. Lisa Burke, Libertyville, Colorado. Everyday Heroes. At an uncertain time, these young women offer a little kids a little magic and hope. Princess power. And there's a picture of a little girl, African-American, with long black braids and a princess tiara on her head, a big smile, and she's standing next to Elsa from Frozen. Elsa, it's you, was the 4-year-old surprise birthday party, and her favorite Disney character, Elsa from Frozen, had arrived. The two jubilantly began to sing the movie's big song, Let It Go, and were soon joined by Tinker Bell and 4 other fairy tale princesses, Anna, Ariel, Jasmine, and Snow White. You would swear you were celebrating the most magical place on earth. But this wasn't Disney World. It was a pediatric cancer ward at a hospital in Long Island, New York. And the princesses were college students who volunteered for A Moment of Magic, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to lift the spirits of sick children. It all began once upon a time with a family movie night featuring Frozen. Kelly McGrain, now 23, noticed that she and Elsa had matching blonde hair and big blue eyes. McGrain and her friend Maggie Ann McAndrews, then both sophomores on service scholarships at the College of Mount St. Vincent in New York City, were searching for a new community project, ideally one with kids. That sparked an idea. Dressing up as Disney princesses and visiting pediatric cancer patients. When kids are in a hospital for so long, they don't get all the magic that most kids do, says McGrain. It's nice to give them time to be themselves. In 2015, after raising $2,000 on a GoFundMe page to pay for costumes and travel expenses, McGrain and McAndrews landed their first gig at Cohen Children's Medical Center in New Hyde Park, New York. They dressed as Elsa and her sister Anna to the squealing delight of the girls and blushing smiles of the boys. They spent nearly 3 hours singing songs, taking pictures, and traveling from one bedside to the next until they had visited and chatted with every one of the 50 children. To see the kids believe in me, my character, it was life-changing, says McGrain. Of course, a princess can work only so many miracles at once, so McCrain and McAndrews recruited their peers. Today, A Moment of Magic has 400 volunteers from 11 colleges around the country. They also have a growing kingdom of fans. Shara Moskowitz from New Jersey says that her 7-year-old daughter, Avery, still talks almost every day by phone or text to the princesses she met nearly 2 years ago at her birthday party. Avery was receiving treatment for a neuroblastoma. My daughter found something that she really needed to connect to, says Moskowitz. These girls gave her that moment of imagination, freedom, and happiness of dreaming. Everyday Heroes, The Boy in the Septic Tank. Madison William was studying. There's a picture of a young lady with her arm in a sling. Got kind of brownish blonde hair. Very attractive young lady. Got boots on and standing next to a big hole with a lid on it. A big pipe with a lid on it. Madison William was studying in her bedroom in Dublin, Ohio, in August 2016, when the door burst open. It was her mother, Lee Williams, with a horrific and incredible story. A little boy fell into a septic tank, and no one can reach him. Then she made this request of her 13-year-old daughter, "Can you help?" Madison and Lee ran to the neighbor's yard, where they found the boy's distraught mother and other frantic adults surrounding a septic tank opening that protruded a few inches above the neatly trimmed lawn. It was 11 inches in diameter, slightly wider than a basketball, with a hatch that had not been secured. The boy, who was only 2 years old, had slipped in and was drowning in 4 feet of sewage inside the tank that was 8 feet deep. The men and women, who minutes earlier had been enjoying a party in a nearby home when they heard the boy's mother scream, were dropping extension cords into the sludge, hoping the child would be able to grab hold so they could pull him out. Madison quickly surveyed the situation. She was the only one who could fit through the small hole. Without hesitation, she got on her stomach next to the opening, placed her arms out in front of her, and told the adults, "Lower me in." Lee and other held her waist and legs. "I wiggled my arms and shoulder till I got through the opening," Madison says. Inside the tank was dark and the air putrid. Madison thrust her arms into the muck. In the process, she jammed her left wrist against a concrete concealed pole, injuring the muscles in her wrist and arm so severely that the hand was rendered useless. Rather than tend to her injury, Madison skimmed the surface of the sewage, hoping to feel the submerged boy. "Every once in a while, I'd see his little toes pop out of the water," she says. "Then I would try to grab them. Minutes ticked by before she saw the faint outline of his foot again. Madison shot her good hand out and grasped the foot tightly. "Pull me up," she shouted to the others above. As they pulled up to the surface, the boy's free foot got stuck under the inside lip of the hatch. "Lower me down," she yelled. "I had to wiggle his front foot until it was free," she tells Reader's Digest. Then 10 minutes after Madison had entered the tank, she and the boy were lifted out. But the toddler wasn't out of trouble. He had been deprived of oxygen long enough that he wasn't breathing. He was placed on his side, and an adult gave him several hard whacks on the back, one right after the other, until the boy coughed up fluids. It was only when Madison heard him cry that she knew he was all right. It took Madison longer to recover than the boy, who was taken to the hospital and released that same night. She, however, endured months of physical therapy for her wrist, which, says neighbor Mary Hotley, made the girl's action all the more impressive. "Madison's a hero," Holly says. What other teenage girl is going to voluntarily go into a septic tank? Voices and Views, Department of Wit. Valentine's Day's gifts are silly unless... Words of lasting interest. Oh, excuse me. Unless. "Please don't get me anything for Valentine's Day. I mean it. I don't need anything. I don't need you to give me material things to show me how you love me. I know you love me. Oh, that's all that matters." This is by Robin McCauley. I mean, okay, if you really want to do something to show me you love me on Valentine's Day, you can just make me something. Handmade gifts are the best. I would love nothing more than a thoughtful handmade Tiffany diamond ring or card. By the way, speaking of gifts, tomorrow is Chocolate Cake Day. If you do make me a card, you don't have to write a love poem in it or anything like that. I don't need all that mushy stuff. Besides, not many words rhyme with my name, Robin. Bobbin? No, that's not good for a poem. Maybe try love, dove, glove, in awe of. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I for sure don't need a pretty heart-shaped box of chocolates for Valentine's Day. You never know what is inside each piece, so you have to lick a little bout out of all of them just to find the one you like, which is really all of them. But no, I can't eat them anyway because I'm trying to not eat sweets, unless it's a special occasion. Some women like getting adorable red or pink teddy bears for Valentine's Day. You know, the ones that have I love you embroidered on them. But not me. I can't even imagine where I would keep something like that besides my bed or on the couch, or in the back window of my car, or my desk at work. Where would I put something like that? I don't need to go out for a fancier dinner on Valentine's Day. Even if we wanted to get a table at a fancy restaurant for Valentine's Day, we wouldn't be able to now. It's too late, right? Are you sure? Maybe we should call around. You did? Oh, well, there's no need to make special romantic candlelit dinner for me at home. I don't need a perfectly cooked filet mignon with mashed potatoes and asparagus. I'm fine with leftovers or frozen pizza. No Fuss is my middle name, for sure. Don't worry about making a delicious creamy cheesecake with cherry topping for dessert. Cheesecake is hard on to make, and there are really easy recipes online. Oh, and definitely don't make me red roses for Valentine's Day. Yuck. Who would want red roses? Pink roses are prettier. But as I said, please don't get them for me. They would just die anyway, and I would like to be able to really enjoy them for only a week or so. Well, probably longer if I put an aspirin in the water. They would probably stay pretty for almost 2 weeks, maybe three. But don't get me any. I don't need them. And I don't even think about planning a surprise romantic Valentine's weekend getaway. I don't need to be whisked away for a fun trip to know that you love me. That would be just too much planning. How would I pack for a surprise trip? You would have to pack a suitcase for me, and then I would have to wear what you pack for me, like a bikini, or my company flats that would make it easier to walk the cobblestones and say, Rome, or that blue sweater in the third drawer on the right side of the dresser beneath the gray shawl to keep me warm during those chilly February nights in Paris. But I know you. I'm sure you're sensible and know a surprise romantic trip would not be something I would enjoy at all. It's a cruise, isn't it? You booked us on a romantic cruise? Robin McCarley is an artist and writer living in Los Angeles with a husband and four cats. And there's a drawing of her, and she looks like a typical California girl with long, straight, blonde hair. Words of lasting interest. Coming to appreciate that nothing in life is permanent except maybe that ink stain. Say yes to the ruined dress. I was flying on an airplane the other day when my now new pen splattered black ink all over the front of my new dress. The pen was my favorite kind of pen, or was until then, a Bic Z4 roller. The real ink was what had made me love Z4 rollers. It was thinner than what comes out of, say, a regular Bic pen, which meant you barely had to touch the paper to get the pen to move across it. Z4s are like fountain pens, only without the messy qualities of a fountain pen. I loved them deeply. I loved my new dress even more, though. It was from Banana Republic, and I had paid a full price for it, which I never do. But the dress was worth it. It was casual and a little dressy at the same time. Sleeveless with a scoop neckline, a tailored waist, and slightly puffy skirt. It had flattering, thin vertical blue and white stripes, and the fabric was a blend of cotton and something human-made that nevertheless felt soft and not fake and yet required no maintenance, no dry cleaning, no ironing. The dress practically sprang itself out of the dryer and stood up on its own, wrinkle-free and ready to go. Also, it had my favorite feature in a dress, which is pockets. They were hidden pockets sewn into the seam, which I like even more. After the explosion on the plane, I tacked the big wet splotches of ink with water and a napkin. If anything, this seemed to set the stains. As soon as we landed, I ran to an airport store and bought one of those little travel packets of disposable cloth soaked in stain remover and tried scrubbing the splotches again. I knew this would be futile, and it was. I went to my hotel, changed my clothes, and put the ruined dress into my suitcase. I couldn't bear to throw it away. Maybe someone would invent a magical ink stain remover in the next week, and I'd have thrown out the dress for nothing. Sometimes, when something bad happens to me, I play a little game. The object is to ask yourself whether the bad timing or just happened has any silver lining, whatever. It's corny but comforting. If you try it, you'll be surprised. There's some good thing, even if it's tiny, even if you have to strain for it, in almost every misfortune. I never thought I'd say it, but I can even see the upside of my having had cancer. It took me a long time to feel that way, and I won't get into it here, but if you don't die, a big caveat, I know, there is one, I swear. But I have thought about my ruined dress and what the upside of it could be, and I just cannot think of one thing. I put this question to a friend, and she said that the ruined dress was one of those lessons about the impermanence of things, about non-attachment, of how everything changes and how life is about letting go. I considered this, and then I thought, I already know that. Doesn't everyone over, say, 40 know it? Haven't we all lost a lot of things? In fact, not to sound too dreary, but doesn't it sometimes seem as if life is just one big leave-taking after another from your children, from checker cabs, from weather that makes sense, from people we love who will move far away or die too young? So much loss. A new dress isn't a show of attachment to material objects, oh, maybe just a little. I knew the dress would start looking shabby one day, but buying a new dress is an act of hope, a show of spirit in the face of an unreliable universe. At least that's what my new dress was. It had been a trying year, and a new emblem of my hope and these big black splotches all over it. But you know what? Here's what I attached to, possibility, pleasure. They're less lofty than hope, less credulous, less faith-based, and they're more accessible. I went to the flea market yesterday and I found a pretty little platter. It's practically ordering me to roast a chicken, invite a couple of people over, and serve the chicken on it. I think I'll make peach cobbler for dessert. Someone, probably me, could drop and break the platter during the evening. It's unlikely but possible, like the ink exploding from my pen. But was that a reason not to buy it? My dress and I, we were great while we lasted. Never mind. That's the way some love affairs go. Author and numerist Jenny Allen has written for the New Yorker, Esquire, and many other publications. Would Everybody Please Stop is her latest book. Finish this sentence. This is one of my favorite pieces, as you all know. I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "A hug is priceless." Amanda Brooks, Mandeville, Oregon. I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "The more something scares you, the more you should do it." Deanna Neville, Cordova, Tennessee. I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "Listen to your elders, not because they're always right, but because they're more experienced at being wrong." Steve Richards, San Antonio, Texas. I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "You should never act your age if you're over 50. Kay Cowher, Lawrence, Kansas. I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "Your fortune is not in here. Go out and conquer the world." Constant Belford, College Park, Georgia. I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "No message today. Confucius is confused." Donna Colpar, Charlotte, North Carolina. I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "Life is made of pieces like this cookie. Some are pointy, some are sweet, but each piece is part of the whole." Richard A. Foster, Phillipsburg, New Jersey. I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "All your exes regret letting you go." Robin Jaloski, Murrells Inlet, South Carolina. And last, I've always wanted to write a fortune cookie saying, "Your mother was right." Melanie Savala, Riverview, Florida. Your true stories in 100 words. My sweethearts. It's Valentine's Day, and I'm a mom, so I get to go grocery shopping. I make a list and plan to leave it once the kids are gone. First, though, I decide to tackle the tornado that hit my kitchen. I wistfully wonder how this holiday might be different without all of this. Finally ready, I glance once more at my shopping list. There at the bottom, my youngest has taped a little cut-out heart and written, "Happy Valentine's Day." A sweet reminder that I have 4 Valentines who each see me as theirs. Lisa Anderson, West Jordan, Utah. Polly want a coffee. Shortly after I moved to a new neighborhood, my African gray parrot accidentally flew out the door. Panicked, I ran after him. One of the new words the parrot had learned recently was coffee, and his nickname was Small. As a result, I was running around yelling, "Small, coffee," at the trees like a madwoman, hoping for him to squawk a response. Finally, a neighbor consciously approached me with a steaming mug in hand and said, "Maybe you should switch to decaf, honey." Remarkably, I got my parrot back later that day. Dina Glenores, Newbury Park, California. Upon further reflection, 3 weeks after my total knee replacement, I had my first outpatient visit with a surgeon. When the office visit was over, my wife left ahead of me to get the car. I walked with my cane through the lobby. As I approached the expert and started to press the automatic door button, I noticed an elderly gentleman approach from the other side. To be courteous, I waited for him to enter first. Only then did I realize I was looking at my own reflection in the door. Gregory Larkin, Indianapolis, Indiana. You be the judge. A woman slips and falls after a big snowstorm. Is her apartment complex liable for nature's handiwork? The case of the icy walkway. The blizzard that pummeled northern Illinois and northwestern Indiana on Groundhog Day in 2011 was a doozy. The National Weather Service declared it the third worst winter storm in Chicago's history. Outside the city, in the town of Carroll Stream, Illinois, more than 20 inches of snow fell. 5 days later, the snow removal service hired by the Klein Creek Condominium Association cleared all the sidewalks at the complex. The snow had mostly melted by February 18th. Pamela Murphy, Hyten, left her condo at 8:30 that sunny but below-freezing morning and walked along the sidewalk behind her building toward the parking lot. Next thing she knew, she'd fallen, fracturing her leg, knee, and hip. As she waited on the ground for the paramedics, she felt the ice on the sidewalk. The patch was about the size of a sheet of paper. 4 months and several surgeries later, on June 13th, Murphy Hyten filed a negligent action in the Circuit Court of Cook County against the condominium association and its management company, alleging that their negligent maintenance of the premises created a natural accumulation of ice, which caused her to fall. 3 years later, on August 14, 2014, the trial court sided with the defendants and dismissed the case. Why? The owners of the complex were protected by Illinois Snow and Ice Removal Act. The law states that property owners are not required to remove snow and ice because basically the weather there is too unpredictable for them to take on such an unreasonable burden of vigilance. While a property owner is encouraged to clean the sidewalks, according to the Act, he or she is not liable if someone gets hurt by slipping and falling on the snowy or icy condition. Nevertheless, Murphy Houghton appealed to the Illinois Supreme Court. Can a property owner be liable if someone slips and falls on snow and ice on the property? You be the judge. Yes. Many municipalities, land, and some states require property owners to remove snow and ice after a storm, but the regulations vary widely. However, Merton Hilton argued that this class of laws didn't apply to her case. She said that the ice that felled her wasn't from the snowstorm, instead had allegedly formed when melting snow was funneled into sidewalk from a poorly maintained drains and refos there. The Illinois Supreme Court agreed with her ruling that the state's Snow and Ice Removal Act does not immunize owners when an icy sidewalk that causes an injury is due to a negligent failure to maintain the premises. That meant her case against Klein Creek and its management company could proceed. Attorneys are back in mediation to determine whether the complex is liable after all, and if so, what damages will be awarded. Okay, with that, let's switch over to the Consumer Reports. This edition, if you remember correctly, is the one that is February edition that's 43 ways to pay less. And right now we're on number five. We're on health dollars. Five ways to save on your medications. Take advantage of drugstore discounts. Stores such as Kmart, Sam's Club, and Walmart offer hundreds of common generic drugs at very low prices, sometimes as low as $4 to $10, which could be less than your insurance copay. Ask the pharmacist whether the store has a discount program. Note, money spent on meds purchased to use discount programs doesn't go towards your insurance deductibles. Beware pricing combo drugs. Whether the patient on a drug with a patent on a drug nears its end, some manufacturers reformulate the medication into something new they can place price higher than the generic equivalent. For example, the expensive migraine drug Trexamet is actually a combination of two older, low-cost generic drugs, sumatriptan and naproxen. Nine tablets of 85 to 500 milligram Trexamet cost $695 at healthwarehouse.com. But the same website offers nine 100 milligram tablets of sumatriptan for less than $16 and nine 500 milligram naproxen tablets for about $5. That's a savings of $674. Ask your doctor how much this drug cost. A CR poll of 200 doctors in 2016 found that they generally don't discuss the cost of a drug with their patients. But if price is an object for you and you let your doctor know that, he or she can look up the drug's cost and, if necessary, can help you find a more affordable alternative, such as the medication's generic equivalent. Don't assume using your insurance at the pharmacy is the cheapest. A survey of pharmacists by the National Community Pharmacists Association found that many knew of instances of clawbacks when the price of your insurer makes a pharmacy charge you is more than the farmer's normally retail price. Think your pharmacist will flag that when it happens? Not necessarily. Some pharmacists can tell you about lower prices only if you ask first. Ask your doctor whether you can stop taking any of your meds. A 2017 CR National Survey shows that when patients ask their health care providers whether they can stop taking one or more of their prescription medications, in 71% of the cases, the doctor eliminated at least one drug. Because health care costs have risen, most of us are paying higher premiums, deductibles, and copays, but only 3% of us have tried to trim what we contribute out of pocket by comparison shopping our health care, i.e., finding out in advance what different doctors charge for, say, an MRI or a knee replacement surgery. One reason, consumers don't know that doctors' fee information is easy to find using the cost estimate tools on most health insurance websites. You can also use third-party sites such as healthcarebluebook.com, fairhealthconsumer.org, Guru, which is G-U-R-O-O.com, and Amino.com. Know what's free. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, nearly all of us who have insurance are entitled to certain preventive services free of charge, as long as we stay in our insurance network. What you can get for no cost may surprise you. Blood pressure testing, breastfeeding support, colonoscopies, depression screening, nutrition counseling, and vaccinations. Check out the full list of eligible services at healthcare.gov. Leverage tax breaks. Another way to ease the pain of high out-of-pocket medical costs is to put money into a flexible spending account, FSA, or health savings account, HSA. Both allow you to let aside tax-free dollars to cover costs that your insurance doesn't. Note that the FSAs are offered only if you have employer-based insurance. The HSAs are available only to those in high-deductible plan. It's smart to contribute the maximum if you can afford it to the FSAs, up to $2,650 a year for HSAs, up to $3,450 annually for individuals, and $6,900 for families. Get care on the calendar. Keep track of your spending against your annual deductibles, which results every year. If you expect you'll need an expensive procedure that will get you close to or over your deductible, schedule it early in the year if you can. That way, if you need more care later in the year, your insurance will kick in. And don't put off making doctor's appointments. Make sure your physician has room in his or her schedule before January 1st, when your deductible resets. Your appliance dollars. Three ways to get a good deal on appliances. Smart shoppers know to look for big discounts on large appliances on holiday weekends. But if that timing doesn't work for you, here are other ways to find deals. Manufacturer offers and rebates. Check the websites of manufacturers and retailers for special offers and rebates. Then check our ratings on these appliances. The offers typically apply to specific models purchased within a certain time frame, and if there's a rebate, you'll need to mail it in for submit it online by the deadline that's spelled out. Recently, GE offered up to $1,000 in savings on paired appliances. One offer even offered a free dishwasher if you brought three other qualifying appliances. Price matches. Compare price match policies of your favorite retailers. Although only about 3 to 10 Americans say they have requested a discount to match the price of another store based on a 2017 CR survey of 1,033 respondents. This is a great way to get a better deal. Best Buy, for example, matches the prices of local competition, and major online retailers such as Amazon, Home Depot matches the competitors' prices for online purchases. For in-store buys, Home Depot will beat your competitor's price by 10%. Utility rebates. Search for rebates on Energy Star appliances at energystar.gov/rebate-finder and on the website of your utility company. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, most utility appliance programs rebate the purchase of Energy Star certified products. Clothes washers and dryers, refrigerators and water heaters are among those eligible appliances. Your personal finance dollars. Do your own taxes. You pay about $180 on average to have a professional prepare a federal Form 1040 with a standard deduction and a state return, since the National Society of Accountants. Itemizers pay an average of almost $275 for a federal return and a state filing. So if you have a few hours and a bit of patience, consider doing your own taxes. All the major do-it-yourself tax preps brand, H&R Block, TaxAct, TaxLater, and TurboTax, have free versions for people filing simple 1040EZ federal forms, and all but TaxLater have free prep and filing for 1040A forms, too. Simple state forms are also free. For people with somewhat more complex tax situations, prices range from about $22 to $150 to prepare a federal form. State forms start at around $27. Our comparisons of the online and app versions of H&R Block, TaxAct, and TurboTax found that each can ably handle itemized returns that aren't too complex. Each brand has its benefits and limitations. TaxAct Plus Online provides step-by-step guidance for the investors, for example. H&R Block Deluxe and TurboTax Deluxe require you to upgrade for that feature. If you're self-employed and need to fill out Schedule C, all three require an upgrade. Save on investing costs. For anyone who wants to investing help, It's easier than ever to get advice on low cost, that is, if you're willing to trust a computer to manage your portfolio. Traditionally, investors have had to pay high fees for financial planning and asset management. Typically, the median annual fee is 1% of your investment portfolio, according to the 2000 Inside Information Advisory Fees Survey. So if you have a $500,000 portfolio, you would give up $5,000 to your financial advisor. But in recent years, a new option has emerged. Robo-advisors, which use computer algorithms to manage your portfolio, with results that can be as good as or better than what a human advisor delivers. Plus, their fees are lower, typically averaging from 0.15% to 0.5% annually. Betterment, for one, charges annual fees of just 0.25% and is 0.4%. At Wealthfront, accounts pay no fees for the first $10,000. Larger accounts pay 0.25%. Increasingly, traditional investment firms, including Schwab and Vanguard, are offering their own robo-services or hybrid versions that include phone access to financial advisors. Robo-advisors typically invest your money in low-cost index funds or exchange-traded funds, ETFs. A typical stock ETF might cost you just 0.04% yearly. By contrast, the average annual cost of an actively managed stock fund is 1.17%, according to Morningstar Direct. That cost advantage can help you hang on to more of your savings. Never pay another ATM fee. You can avoid ATMs altogether by taking the cashback option when you pay for purchases using your debit card at many supermarkets, drugstores, or other retailers. Even better, slash the amount of cash you need in the first place. You can do this electronically using Zelle, person-to-person P2P network. That's Z-E-L-L-E. Which lets you send cash from your bank account to another person's. This free feature is handy if you need to reimburse a friend for your half of the tab for lunch, say, or if you want to spot the babysitter a few bucks to pick up some groceries. Zelle is already built into the mobile banking apps of major financial institutions such as Bank of America, Chase, and Wells Fargo, and the money typically transfers in minutes since the sender and recipient have enrolled. Your technology dollars. Fire your cable company. Cutting the cord has been a holy grail for consumers for years. That's when you keep your internet service but cancel the TV package, perhaps subbing an online streaming service such as Amazon Prime and Netflix for entertainment. But in the past, doing that could have meant giving up a familiar channel such as NBC, Fox, and HGTV. No longer. Newer internet TV services such as DirecTV, now Hulu with Live TV, and Sling, including conventional channels in their mix. For instance, streaming service DirecTV now charges $35 per month for a bucket of more than 60 channels. There are also higher-priced options that offer more if you can add some premium channels such as HBO for just $5 to $8 per month. Keep in mind, all services offer different mixes of channels and pricing. And these services don't have all of the channels available in all markets. Don't overpay for cellular data. Unlimited data plans cost just $60 to $85 for a single line, depending on the carrier and such factors as whether you want HD quality video. But the takeaway is this. An unlimited data plan may be cheaper than whatever older plan you're still using, and may be cheaper than paying for such lines' data individually. For instance, last fall, a 10-gigabyte plan from AT&T was $100 for a single line, $5 more than the company's unlimited plus option for one line. On the other hand, if you don't use much data, don't pay for it. You can get unlimited voice time and 1 gigabyte of data for just $30 at Consumer Cellular, less if you're on AARP member. And this carrier, along with Ting, just happens to be CR's highest-rated traditional call service provider, based on our summer 2016 subscriber survey. Buy, don't rent your router. If you're still paying rental fees for your modem or router, you could be losing money. Leasing a cable company router or modem generally sets consumers back $5 to $10 per month, or about $60 to $100 a year, $120 a year, on top of the fees you pay for your internet service. Buy the equipment and you're ahead with a year or two. Just make sure any modem router combination you buy is compatible with your service. Most traditional modems work with the cable networks, but not the fiber optic networks such as Verizon Fios. Found money. how to discover funds owed to you, appeal your property tax assessment. If you think your home and land have been overassessed and you turn out to be right, appealing your property tax can result in savings of hundreds or even thousands of dollars a year, but it's a complicated, time-consuming process. Number one, take note of the appeal filing deadline and the local process. Some locations may let you file an appeal only during certain times of the year, and the local appeals board may meet only for a limited time periods within the year. Number two, look for errors in the assessor's description of your home. An overstated square footage, for instance, can inflate the assessed value, or get a pro to independently verify your home's value. The cost typically is a few hundred dollars. Find one of the National Association of Independent Fee Appraisers. Examine the assessor's valuation of comparable local properties. You can find comps through a real estate agent or on the estate websites. Then research the up-to-date assessments on those properties at your municipality's assessor's office or on its website. If comparable homes have either sold at or are assessed above your home's assessed value, it may not be worth continuing. Number four, if you proceed, set up a file with photographs, records of recent sales, or your independent appraisal. An organized presentation will make your argument stronger. In some cases, the local assessor might examine your appeal and make a decision, or you might need to present before a local appeals board. If you can't convince either, consider appealing to your state property tax appeal board. Search for unclaimed funds. This is easy as typing your name and its variants into the search box of missingmoney.com. The site looks for that name among unclaimed funds, programs in some U.S. states, territories, and Canadian provinces. All manner of personal accounts show up on an unclaimed fund site, including unclaimed escrow, forgotten safe deposit, box contents, and utility deposits, and uncashed checks and wages. You could be owed a dividend check worth a few dollars or a life insurance policy worth thousands. How does this money land there? When a former vendor can't find you, it's required to eventually hand over the funds or property to the state's unclaimed property program. As in usa.gov/unclaimed-money, you'll find more to help to locate. Department of Veterans Affairs, the insurance funds, foreign claims, pensions from now-defunct companies and or plans, and tax refunds, among other items. How to make 6 major appliances last longer. Appliances suffer from misuse and lack of maintenance. Here's what to do to get the most out of your machines. Dishwashers. When loading, make sure the silverware and dishes are placed so that they don't catch the spray arms and damage them. If your dishwasher has a manual clean filter, clean it regularly according to the manufacturer's instruction to avoid food buildup. Wipe down the door gaskets from time to time to avoid food buildup and odors. Ranges. On a smooth top, place heavy pots and pans gently and never drag them from one element to another. For gas cooktop burners, clean food particles from between the slots in the burner heads to ensure an even flame, and use a needle or straight pin to carefully clean a clogged burner ignition port. Keep the oven free of food buildup by periodically using a self-cleaning feature or cleaning manually per the manufacturer's instructions. Refrigerators. Don't pack it too full so that it can circulate freely and the compressor doesn't have to work overtime. Clean the compressor coils every few months. Check your owner's manual for the coil's location. Then vacuum them with a soft bristle brush attachment. Wipe door gaskets with mild detergent and water, not bleach. Maintain a stainless finish by using dish detergent, water, and a sponge, or use a stainless cleaner recommended by the manufacturer. Washers. At least once a year, move grit from the screens where the local hose is attached to the water. Don't stuff the washer beyond its manufactured recommended capacity. Make sure the machine sits on a level and well-supported subfloor to prevent excessive vibration. And to keep the washer from working harder than it has to, heed the manufacturer's instructions about how much detergent to use. Dryers. Clean the lint filter after each use to keep air flowing freely. Check the exhaust duct periodically, especially if you find that the dryer isn't sufficiently heating or takes longer than usual to dry a load. Clean the duct once a year to keep it from clogging with lint, which is also a fire hazard. And if you use dryer sheets, clean the moisture sensor strips inside the dryer with a little scrubbing alcohol to remove film buildup, which hurts performance. Vacuums. Change the vacuum bag and clean the filters as needed. Avoid vacuuming. Avoid vacuuming up sharp or large objects, which can clog or damage a vac's components. And running over the cord, which can fray and pose an electric shock hazard. Whether you have a bagged or bagless vacuum, don't let the bag or bin get filled to the brim, which makes the motor work harder. A motorized brush tangled with hair also adds stress to the motor, so keep that clean as well. 8 things to never skimp on. Car safety features. The systems that can help you prevent a car crash or survive one are worth every penny. Buy as many car safety features as you can afford, especially forward collision warning and automatic emergency braking, even if it means foregoing the sunroof or leather seats you have your heart set on. Better yet, choose a model that has safety features as standard. Sunscreen. Though you can use CR's ratings to find a high-performing, inexpensive product, you shouldn't try to save money by using only a tiny amount. To properly cover your body, you need to use a shot glassful every 2 hours that you're in the sun. Vaccines. Last year's flu vaccine wasn't necessarily protect you from this year's flu. And when it comes to vaccines that call for multiple doses, such as the MMR for kids, optimal protection requires all doses be given. Don't skimp on the boosters that are recommended for adults during outbreaks either. The protection from some vaccines wears off over time. Also, adults should get a tetanus booster every 10 years. Good news! All these are covered by most insurance plans or are available for very little cost at your local drugstore. Car insurance. Never buy a policy that just meets the minimum liability limits required by your state, because those may be insufficient to cover the cost of a major accident and typically are far below the standard 100-300-100, which pays bodily injury up to $100,000 per person and $300 per accident, and property damage up to $100,000. Don't skip uninsured, underinsured motorist protection either. You'll need this if you're in an accident caused by an uninsured driver. Interior and exterior paint. CR's proprietary paint tests. Go to cr.org/crow-paints. Sorry about that. Continue to find that economy goodness grades of interior paint don't perform well overall, and you may need to apply 3 or 4 coats to cover dark colors. You also don't have to buy ultra-premium paints. Just avoid the bottom of the barrel, so to speak. Economy interior exterior paints don't weather as well as the top-of-the-line products from the same brand. So you'll be back on that ladder sooner than you imagined. Do-it-yourself identity protection. Pay the fee up to $10 per credit bureau, depending on your state, to freeze your credit report at each of the big 3 credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. That is one of the best ways to lock out the identity thief who wants to open a new credit with your name. Charging cords. It's worth protecting your expensive phone by using a decent power cord. Cheap cords may not have undergone stringent testing by Underwriters Laboratories, a leading safety testing organization, whose logo you see on many electronic devices. These cheap cords could damage your device while avoiding the warranty, and even on rare occasions cause a fire. Home insurance. Don't buy less costly actual cash value homeowners insurance to cover your home's contents. Always get replacement coverage. In the event you were to make a claim, an actual cash value policy would reimburse you only for your belongings' depreciated value, which probably wouldn't be enough to cover the cost of replacing everything. By default, most homeowners' policies cover the replacement value of your home's structure. Whoa, the next article in Consumer Reports is about pizza, and I'm taping this about lunchtime, so this thing really looks good. Pie in the sky. Can a frozen pizza taste good and still be reasonably healthy? Just in time for the big game, we rate 26 to see whether you can pick one that scores. Next to Thanksgiving, Super Bowl Sunday is the biggest eating day of the year. And what's find its way onto many party menus? Pizza, of course. It's pretty popular every other day, too. 1 in 8 Americans has a slice or 2 or 3 on any given day. And according to the market research firm Mintel, much of that is frozen. 37% of us eat frozen pizzas 2 to 3 times per month. A recent test of 26 cheese and vegetable pies show that opting for a frozen one is actually a pretty good plan. And then they have pictures here of Against the Grain, 3-cheese gluten-free pizza, Newman's Own, thin and crispy post-roasted vegetables, American flatbread, tomato sauce, and 3-cheese pizza, Trader Joe's organic roasted vegetable pizza, Amy's cheese pizza, Amy's roasted vegetable pizza, no cheese, Dr. Oetker Virtuoso thin crispy crust pizza vegetable medley, and then California Pizza Kitchen, spinach and artichoke crispy thin crust pizza. How to make a more perfect pie. You'll get the best results from a frozen pizza if you follow these tips. Preheat the oven. It's key to good browning and crisping. Don't shortcut this step. Don't thaw the pie unless the directions on the box specifically allow you to do so. Put the frozen pie directly into the preheated oven. Slide it onto an oven rack. This makes for a crispier crust. The rack should be positioned in the center of the oven. Add your own veggies and fresh herbs. Baby spinach, mushrooms, onions, peppers, and sliced tomatoes are good choices, but you can use whatever you like. Saute or roast the veggies lightly to remove some of the water so your pie won't get soggy during baking. Finish with fresh herbs such as basil or oregano. These additions not only improve the nutritional content, but will also help get a frozen pie a fresher taste. Frozen pie gets a makeover. Frozen pies have always been dogged by a reputation for being highly processed and not so tasty. Mintel's research shows that more than half of frozen pizza buyers said they'd buy a pie more often if it weren't so processed, and 59% said they'd buy more if they had more premium ingredients. That's led frozen pizza manufacturers to try to improve their product by cutting out preservatives and artificial flavors, lowering the sodium content, and making crust with whole grains. There are a lot of more options now on frozen pizzas with clean ingredients that look more like I would make at home if I started from scratch, says Rachel Cheatham, Ph.D. Our test results show that these efforts are making a difference. About half the pieces earned a very good rating for taste. Nutrition was a bit trickier, although we found several pies that in the realm of pizza are reasonably nutritious choices. You'll still be hard-pressed to call any of them health food. We didn't find any that should give our highest marks to, mostly because the fiber, saturated fat, and sodium contents drag down the nutrition scores. Many of these cheese pizzas and all the veggie ones received a good rating for nutrition, with the veggie pizzas tending to have more fiber, less saturated fat, and a little less sodium than the cheese pizzas, says Ellen Claus, a Consumer Reports nutritionist. 3 of the veggie pies we tested, California Pizza Kitchen, spinach and artichoke, crispy thin crust, Trader Giotto's organic roasted vegetable, and Dr. Oetker's Virtuoso thin and crispy crust pizza, vegetable medley, scored the only very good over ratings of the bunch. The role of toppings and crust. Whether you opt for frozen takeout, chowing down a couple of slices can mean taking in nearly 750 calories and an alarming 1,600 milligrams of sodium. U.S. dietary guidelines call for less than 2,300 milligrams per day. And depending on your choice of toppings, pizza can also pack a significant amount of saturated fat. We picked plain cheese and vegetable pizzas to test, knowing that those with meat toppings would have rated worse on the nutritional front. Losing the meat and adding veggies is a good way to make pizza into a healthier meal, says Laurel Wright, RD, PhD. You'll get more fiber, more vitamins and nutrients, and less sodium and fat. When trying to pick a healthier pizza, considering a vegetable pie. The veggie pies we tested were for the most part lower in saturated fat than the cheese pizza, Claude says. Thin crust can sometimes save you some calories, but doesn't automatically assume that a thin crust pie is better choice. For example, Red Baron Thin and Crispy Crust 5-Cheese Pizza is similar in calories and fat to the Tombstone Original 5-Cheese Pizza and has considerably more sodium. Whole grain crusts aren't easy to find, but they're worth seeking out. If you go for one made with whole grains, you can double the fiber, Wright says. In our testing, for example, Freschetta Artisan Crust Just 4-Cheese Pizza had multi-grain crust and 4 grams of fiber per serving. Most of the other cheese pizza had 1 to 2 grams. Why size matters? We found that serving sizes for these frozen pizzas varied quite a bit, Claus says. Sometimes it's one-third of a pie, sometimes a quarter, and for one of the thin crust pies we tested, American flatbread, tomato sauce, and three cheese pizza, a single serving was half the pizza. So even though calories per serving averaged about 300, you easily consume 2 to 3 times that if you don't pay attention to the serving size. If your favorite frozen pizza is higher in calories, fat, or sodium than you'd like, consider having just a slice and rounding out your meal with a big salad. Easy Bake Ovens. You don't have to turn on your own oven to heat up a frozen pizza. These countertop toaster ovens do a dandy job. A smaller interior of a toaster oven means it will take less time to reach the desired baking temperature than if you used a regular oven. So if you go from freezer to plate faster, to fill a typical frozen pie, you'll need a toaster oven with a depth of at least 12 inches, such as the two below. Breyerville was tops in our rating, but the Krupp scored well. Breyerville's Smart Oven Pro, $270, fits a 13-inch pizza. And Krupp's Deluxe Convection Toaster, $120, fits a 12-inch pizza. Takeout pizza that packs a punch. While none of the frozen pizzas we tested are nutritional superstars, many are better choices compared to what's on the menu of popular takeout chains. Crust made only with refined white flour, crust stuffed with cheese and toppings that include several types of processed meat, add up to pizzas that are nutritionally on a par with a double cheeseburger in some cases, single slice can deliver a half of the recommended daily allowance. Pizza Hut Meat Lover Stiff Crust has 400 calories, 26 grams of fat, 11 grams of saturated fat, 2 grams of fiber, 6 grams of sugar, and 1,300 milligrams of sodium. Domino's Pizza Cali Chicken Bacon Ranch, 400 calories, 20 grams of fat, 7 grams of saturated fat, 2 grams of fiber, 2 grams of sugar, and 880 milligrams of sodium. Papa John's, John's favorite, 390 calories, 20 grams of fat, 9 grams of saturated fat, 1 gram of fiber, 3 grams of sugar, 920 grams of sodium. And Little Caesar's 3-meat treat, 330 calories, 16 grams of fat, 7 grams of saturated fat, 2 grams of fibers, 3 grams of sugar, and 600 milligrams of sodium. And let's close out our program with just a couple points to ponder. I never woke up and thought I really want to live a bold life. I just can't do the other. Angelina Jolie. The two words silent and listen contain the same letters arranged differently. In whatever relationship you may be in, the best way to listen is to remain silent. Since we're all going to get wrinkly and die, maybe we got to accept that it's like what they teach you in driving school. If your car skids, turn the wheels right into it. It's counterintuitive, but don't fight the slide. Well, we've just about run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.